website for this compilation album is not in front of me. You would think. Here. Nationalparksproject.ca. There's a collection of short films and performance videos, as well as the music from this CD, so check that out. And that last piece was by Mathieu Charbonnet and André Etier, whose names I have tried to pronounce but have failed. Before that, here's another one that I can't pronounce. Sion Ankulapo Kuti, one of the sons of Fela Kuti, with his group Egypt 80. A song called Rise from a new album, From Africa with Fury, Rise. Out this year on the Knitting Factory Records. That worked for me. And that all came out of David Harvey giving a speech last year at the RSA, the Royal Society of this, that, and the other thing. You're listening to What's Left, or you have been anyway. It's now 6:58. We're just about out of time. A couple of notes from the What's Left Radical Events calendar for you before we make way for Music for Human Beings coming up in a few moments. The Sacco and Vanzetti commemoration, the annual Sacco and Vanzetti commemoration, takes place this Sunday at 2 p.m. People will be on the streets of Boston marking the wrongful execution here in Boston of Sacco and Vanzetti. Gather at 2 p.m. at the Visitor's Center on Tremont Street near the Park Street T station. And there will be a gathering at 2. Then at 3 p.m., the group will march to the Greenway Park on Hanover and Surface Streets in the North End. And there will be speeches, music, poetry, readings, and a commitment to not let Nicola and Bart's deaths be in vain. The struggle continues. For more information, visit saccoandvanzetti.org. It's sponsored by the Sacco and Vanzetti Commemoration Society, co-sponsored by many fine Boston area organizations. Say, where'd that background music go when you need it? It'll be back after this message. An exhibit featuring works by incarcerated artists opened recently. It's running through September. The show, put together by local prison abolitionist groups Black and Pink and Boston Anarchist Black Cross, will be on display at Somerville's Papercut Zine Library, located at 226 Pearl Street. The space is open Saturdays and Sundays from 2 to 7 p.m. and by appointment. The exhibit sheds light on the conditions in which an ever-growing number of Americans find themselves. Ranging from political indictments to some lighthearted moments, the show offers a window into how individuals can use art as a tool of survival in the midst of degrading and potentially violent conditions. For more information about the exhibit, visit blackandpinkart.org. And we are really all out of time. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Thanks for being with us on What's Left. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings coming up momentarily. It's just past 7 p.m. This is WMBR in Cambridge.
powerful today. I think I could kill you with my mind. What a feeling. It's a little dangerous. It's all that fasting. Thoughtful, slow. Beautiful. Here with me are three hosts. They are one by one, slow, thoughtful, or beautiful. I will leave it to you to determine which is which. Let us bring Aurora. Aurora, marhaban.
Namaste. It is wonderful to be here. In a slow, but beautiful manner.
And thoughtful also.
I think so.
Do you feel powerful?
I feel powerless, actually.
Hungry.
Some may say hungry, but I do not hunger for food. I hunger for proximity, for understanding.
For slow, thoughtful, and beautiful people.
And a leisurely, relaxing evening, which hopefully we shall enjoy from now.
We welcome next Erno. Erno the Wanderer and Potions Master. Erno, marhaban.
Hello, Doctor. I hope your week has treated you well, and I must say I am very flattered that you would imply that I am beautiful. I have indeed been working on my complexion, and I am glad that you noticed.
You are beautiful, Erno. But really, we should leave it for the listeners to decide.
I believe they already have.
I would not be too hasty, just because we tell them something. It's not always that they believe us.
And I do believe that all of these characteristics flavor us to a certain extent. We are all but mixtures of all these different adjectives and verbs.
We are all at once powerful and beautiful.
And a little bit insane.
And weak, I think. Erno said weak. Yeah, in fact, the extent to which we are disbelieved is so great. One of the letters that is often addressed to me says, Dr. Jalis, are you real? To which I laugh, of course. Say, if I were unreal, would I read this?
But it is a deeper question. And that of your credentials, perhaps.
No, it's an ontological question. Do you exist?
I mean, do any of us exist?
What is existence?
So it's a challenging question. say, well, you have a mind. Perhaps my existence is only there.
It's like the old saying, I am, therefore I think.
Precisely. And here in the final member of the Troika, Zorro the Magnificent, Zorro Marhaban.
Hello, Doctor, and hello, of course, to all the listeners out there as well. I'd like to thank you and my thoughtful and beautiful co-hosts today.
And slow.
Yes, also. These questions of existence are quite fragile in a way. I think that answering some of them is an exercise in forgetting.
I have just forgotten what you have said.
Well, I think I am trying to say that we must take our beliefs and things that we hold for granted and dissolve them in order to better understand what we mean when we ask a question like, do I exist? How do I exist?
You know, I actually approve greatly of this technique. I think that one of the major failings of civilization is that when we are within a civilization, we are raised to become a member, just as the member of the ant colony follows a predetermined path. So do we in our minds become so fixed within our assumptions, within the assumptions of our society, that we can perhaps lose sense of truth, sense of understanding.
So you think that we perhaps need to look outside of ourselves for this answer?
Attempt to ask the questions. If we were born in a forest, or perhaps within a colony of young children, how would we evolve? What would we think is truth?
I think that to look outside yourself is the right way to answer this question, but specifically the best way is to ask a mirror.
To ask whom?
A mirror.
I believe Zorro means a device that provides a reflection.
A mirror.
I see.
Mirror.
So what Zorro is saying implicitly here, one may answer, to grow, look outward. To grow, look inward. Zorro says no. To grow, look outward.
I believe that what he means is that by looking outward and by connecting with the world around us, we learn more about who we really are. The world is like a mirror, a spiritual mirror.
So take a magnifying glass. Look at yourself.
Yes, you... you are the proverbial ant underneath the flame of the magnifying glass. You burn away the outer coating, the sheath of darkness, to see the inner soul of your being.
A phoenix-like rebirth.
Indeed.
Or an onion-like exploration under each layer, simply more layers. No core. And under pressure, it becomes a layered diamond.
I wonder if my co-hosts believe in a core of the being. Do you believe that there is one spot where we exist, or perhaps instead we are more esoteric, spread out beings?
I really
layers
like...
upon layers, excuse me.
No, I'm sorry. I really like this analogy of the onion. If you've grown onions or or if you practice in unraveling them, as I have done, you notice that the initial growth of the onion, there are slight differences at the core center of the onion. And then everything grows around it, smoothing out the slight disturbances in the beginning until it is round, just like every other onion. And so I believe we have all of our fundamental flaws at the core, that as we grow, we attempt to cover, to smooth out, so that we can, like other humans, become spherical and uniform.
I think that if I had to construct a similar analogy, that I would pick a pudding, perhaps a plum pudding, where there is a spread out sort of non-local nature of the self, but there are pieces which are more dense, pieces which are somehow more important upon our own introspection, but not simply one piece which is the middle.
The pudding, when cut, becomes two puddings.
Do you believe, Zoro, that, like Aurora, the being has this fundamental flawed nature, and perhaps the plums in the pudding are rotten, and then the pudding is covered and built around those flaws? Do you believe there's a fundamental...
Well, I think that the word flaw is an expression of an ideal. But I'm not sure that we as beings are manifestations or are attempting to be manifestations of any one ideal. And as such, I don't think that it is kosher, it is correct to regard our fundamental being as flawed, unless we can construct a single ideal with which to apply to all beings. And I'm not sure that there is one. There is such difference of opinion, of goal, of structure to our minds, that it is not clear we can hold to one ideal.
That is very interesting. So, you believe that what one person might consider to be a flaw in Aurora's onion, another person may consider to be a work of art. That's very intriguing, but one thing I would like to point out for anyone listening is that, as far as I'm aware, plums and puddings made out of plums are indeed kosher. I believe that was a misstatement, Zoro.
Pardon, I'm not trying to make any dietary recommendations with my words.
So the pudding model of the soul is, I think, called the Thompson model, whereas the core model wrapped in onions is the newer Rutherford model. The belief is that if you divide an onion without dividing the core, again, the core, it is not known whether it exists or not, then the original core remains except for some shell, and under pressure becomes a shell diamond. The other model is that a soul, if divided, becomes two equal souls, varying only by the mass of the brain. So these are the two models that we have here. When I say model, I don't mean a person. I just mean a way of thinking about a particular soul.
And this is very interesting. I wonder if there is any way to attempt to split the soul in a non-degenerative fashion, or perhaps some other method to determine which model may be more correct.
Well, I think early attempts by spiritual physicists were to throw one soul at another soul, or to throw shells at a soul, but these experiments have been inconclusive, I think mostly due to the difficulty of measuring soul movement. because there really is not yet a screen or a measuring device for soul mass presence or absence.
It's also convoluted by the fact that a souls are not a conserved quantity. For instance, you could have a collision between two souls, and that just happens at random after a party at one night, and then another soul pops into being just out of the energy of the interaction.
Absolutely. And also, souls are growing and shrinking all the time. You know, you may meditate a lot, your soul becomes larger but less dense. It may also become smaller and less dense if you've been, brain surgery or exposed to certain radiation. All of these are possible.
Reality television.
Who knows? So it's still not well understood. This is why the models are so challenging to assemble. But I occasionally will meet someone who, again, under great pressure, physical or emotional abuse, they will become, as far as I can tell, compressed shell. There is no, even removing a single layer is difficult. They become a shell diamond because of all the, you see the pressure, you see the analogy, that if you take a lump of coal and put it under a lot of pressure for an extended period of time, it becomes an actual diamond.
And yet in real life, when this does happen to people, we are so pliable, we are so resilient, that it is a reversible process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is also possible, I think, to take a diamond and to convert it into a lump of coal or into jelly beans.
But
or
no
other
one
things.
Would want to.
It's actually quite easy. I mean, the simplest process is not a physical one, but an economical one. Take the diamond, go to the supermarket, jelly beans. Well, if anyone would like to call in, the number is 617-253-8810, and we'd have two lines available. I'd like to hear from any diamonds that are out there. Marhaban, caller.
Is it over yet?
This is such a caller that I mentioned earlier, clearly the victim of some sort of abuse, and just asking plaintively, is it over?
Well, most certainly.
Very striking.
It really does reflect an attempt to sleep through life, which I believe all of us have experienced in our darkest moments. This desire to just put our heads down until it's over.
Now, the crushed being, which responds after extended periods of abuse and pressure, simply by saying, just wake me when you are done abusing me.
It's a form of retreat, you are saying?
Precisely. It is a defense, because this core, if it even exists, cannot be reached. Again, I feel so powerful. I feel again tonight that my soul is very large. It is extending over the countryside, which I do not see.
Do you feel, if I may ask, do you feel more stretched thin today?
Not thin, simply large.
And is this an aerial stretching? Or do you canvas the buildings?
Definitely aerial. Definitely like a large cloud, except larger than a cloud. Like a massive earth blanket.
Perhaps a gold front.
I don't know, but maybe.
And would you like a blanket? Be comforting. Be a warm welcome. Those in the rain and the cold? Or would you rather, with your power and your great expansiveness, smother?
I don't know, Aurora. I think people might be a little bit too attached to being alive sometimes, and might be okay. Might not be as bad as you might think. It's like going to the dentist.
Now,
sounds unpleasant, but...
I'm simply curious. But do you think that this state is temporary, or that you will be forever this way?
I believe it is temporary. I believe, actually, it is a result of extreme spiritual awareness due to hunger. Because, again, I'm fasting today. There is a calmness that comes along with the fast, with under-eating, that, especially when it is done by choice. Makes me feel like a very large earth balloon stretching over the countryside like a bubble or a blanket or a cloud.
I love the idea of drifting through the world as a bubble, allowing the light to refract through you as you drift through the clouds.
I think I like the idea of, instead of drifting through the earth, but allowing the earth to drift around and through me.
But there is a certain playfulness of a bubble as the wind buffets it about, as it dances through the air, around trees, fading the grasp of greedy young children. Allowing the earth to take you where it will, and just drifting along with it.
But I feel powerful. Aurora, I wonder, what would you do if you were an earth bubble?
A bubble that is larger than Earth, the size of Earth, or... I do not know exactly what you mean by Earth bubble.
Let us say a bubble which is the size of Texas or smaller.
Yes, that narrows it down.
Not the size of the entire planet, but large and powerful, like Texas.
I believe that a bubble after a certain size loses stability, and as grandiose as it may be...
Yeah, you are very stable. So what now? The power. The big bubble. Like an earth blanket. Powerful, large, and comforting, optionally, with the option of killing.
See, I believe I would rather be a tiny bubble.
But you aren't. You are a huge... earth bubble.
Then perhaps fission.
You would split into multiple mini bubbles.
And just drift cheerfully through the countryside.
So imagine, if you will, with me for a moment, Aurora, the earth bubble, the school of earth bubbles, or is it pride? A group of earth bubbles wiggling over the countryside, being popped by small children, occasionally smothering an animal, very small animal, who did not take the moment to really appreciate life properly, and so is extinguished like the flame, in order that one of its more suitable colleagues would survive to truly appreciate life, like a graduate student. Or a mouse. Or an indentured servant of some kind. Like a bubble over the countryside, a small blanket, a bit of yarn. Imagine this now, Aurora.
And may I word jazz along with it?
Please.
First, let us bring a caller into the bubble sphere.
Yes, caller, marhaban.
What does that mean?
Marhaban means welcome.
Oh.
It's almost literally one welcome.
Then I feel welcomed. I've been reading about Bonnie and Clyde.
All right. Are they characters on a television drama?
They were real people. They were outlaws. They were bank robbers and murderers.
But
during the Depression, before the FBI and before police radio.
But how do you know?
I truly do not. They merely are a myth. And it exists in my mind only as mythological patterns. And as I was browsing through Wikipedia, I also came upon Judge Roy Bean. According to them, he wasn't as bad as they said.
So you are.
But as Andy Pratt said, speaking of myths, he was a pretty boy Floyd the outlaw, but I thought I knew him well. That's what Andy Pratt said. And Andy's from Cambridge, so we're on topic.
That's interesting. I'm wondering what the emotional significance of these mythological creatures are for you.
Yes, caller, why? Why the Bonnie? Why the Clyde? Are they too?
Well, why Warren Beatty? Why Lauren Bacall? Why Howard Hughes? Orson Welles?
These are all characters of
Herbert George Wells. Why? Why?
It seems to me
that I can't touch them. I can only smell them.
Because, like vapors. They drift in and out of one's nostrils.
It is the lingering flavor that is important these days, is it not?
Like a peppermint patty which has already dissolved and you are licking it off of the asphalt.
If I might inject something more concrete, it seems to me, Connor, that you're focusing on a specific time period, not too many generations ago. Is there any reason why you might be feeling this resonance with that time?
Well, this is a myth that holds tremendous power. Nobody who was in the United States in 1970 would be unaware of Bonnie and Clyde and their story, as it had just been the subject of a major movie.
But any more than an American in this time would be unaware of Harry Potter.
Now the importance, as I was attempting to perhaps imply earlier, does not lie within the actual existence, does not lie within the details. It lies within the lesson, within the story itself. For really, that is what makes us human.
I can tell you what aspect of this story was new to me.
Please.
And which had the most impact to me and was unfortunately rather affirming of my negative feelings about human society. It turns out that the motivations of Clyde to turn antisocial and try to get back at society was that he had been in prison for a rather minor crime and had been repeatedly sexually abused in prison and in fact killed his tormentor. And despite the fact that he had committed this killing in jail, he was paroled or released on some terms about a year later. So my point is that this man turned against society because of what was done to him when he was in the clutches of society. In a prison, of course, we should have the obligation to take care of the prisoners. We have an obligation to them, but we also have an obligation to ourselves that when a person is released from prison, they're a better person, if possible, than they entered. If we have a system which degrades people and they come out and do more harm, the only ones that benefit are the recidivism industry.
Hmm. Isn't the purpose of prison to get revenge on those who have committed crimes, though?
Is that the purpose of prison? That's perhaps the question I'm asking. I would say, yes, it is. And to our detriment. How many innocent people have been murdered by somebody who went to prison and became a harder person for that experience?
So what should prison be, caller? What is its real purpose?
Well, if I may
object, why should there be prisons?
I think the caller is suggesting that prisoners that are sexually abused should be executed to prevent them from committing further crimes when they emerge.
I'm not sure if that's what is being suggested directly, but
well,
I
let's
think...
Let's let the caller speak.
What would we do without prisons, caller?
There have been societies that do not use prison. Instead of taking an offensive member of society and surrounding them and putting them at the center and pointing our venom at them, there have been societies which simply banished troublemakers. To tell somebody, you are unacceptable as a member of our group, you must leave.
Well,
and only if they come back and attack would they be counterattacked.
Now, caller, is this not another, perhaps even in some cases stronger form of abuse that may leave the banished person more and more mentally maladjusted, and perhaps the answer is in rehabilitation?
Well, is one more likely to rehabilitate oneself when one is dealing with the consequences of their behavior by being rejected, and they can decide whether to go back or not, or in the scenarios that we have where somebody is put in, literally into a cage?
Is this not a false dichotomy, caller?
And I think, caller, they're not that different, really, because, you know, in the society you mentioned, we you know, in our present society, we do not enclose ourselves. We live freely and move freely and seem to be able to live wherever we are in another society.
That is the illusion.
No, in another society, we may enclose ourselves to secure ourselves from the dangerous exterior. So being banished may actually be a true punishment, but
it depends.
I do not think it is a false dichotomy in the least. I think you need to come to grips with what prison existence would be like. Now, take the example of Clyde. If he had not been imprisoned, he would not have been sexually molested and turned into the person that he was. Now, that happened to him. Well, he was in the physical possession and in the care and responsibility of the state of Texas.
But now, caller, I'm merely suggesting that there is a third option, that people who commit violent crimes or perhaps crimes of
necessity... He had not committed a violent crime.
Or other crimes, that they
so the
undergo...
stealing of a milk crate, which is a felony, let's say?
Well, that people...
Three thefts of a milk crate and, what is it, life in prison in California?
Caller, allow me to speak merely that people who commit crimes go under therapy and counseling, and perhaps that is a gentler way of rehabilitating someone rather than ignoring them completely, which can turn into mental illness.
Periods of forced meditation or spiritual rehabilitation.
But here you're confusing the element of crime with the element of antisocial behavior. What about civil disobedience? What about Gandhi? Was Gandhi a criminal? By definition, sure.
Well, caller, but counseling is, I believe, a better alternative when people can express their views and the reason they've acted a certain way. The counselor can say, yes, you know.
I think the problem is perhaps that we treat all criminals as sociopaths, whether they are or not. There's a difference between someone who has made a mistake in their life and someone who just is unable to come to grips with how we relate to other people.
Exactly.
Yet we treat all of them like sociopaths. That is perhaps the issue here.
And there are several definitions of criminal. A person who has been accused of a crime, a person who has been convicted of a crime, or a person who commits a crime. These are all, in the end, makes a very large catch bin that catches just about everybody. We are all, in fact, and indeed, and undeniably criminals. Nobody can deny ever having committed a crime.
But I think if we use a definition which is not exclude any persons, then it is not a very useful one because it does not distinguish. That is, if you have some category that you want to apply, is someone a criminal or not? If you take this category to be so large that everyone is a criminal, then it devalues the meaning of the word.
Well, yes, and well, it should be. Why should the one who gets caught... Now, look at this from the perspective of a professional criminal. A professional criminal does not get caught. He or she could do any number of crimes, and because they know their trade, they're very unlikely to get caught. Plus, if they get caught, they know how to defend in court, on and on and on. The professional
criminal. Call it now, seriously.
As opposed to the first-timer...
Caller, are you suggesting that Bongo and Cloud were not professional, the ones that you venerate?
I don't venerate Bonnie and Claude. Bunny and Claude, excuse me.
But the two of them, they were not professional?
I would put them in the category of profession, yes, professional. But they were also famous.
They were famous, but then they are gone... And really the question is, should they be put into jail to be executed, pilloried, or should they be banished?
No, they were executed.
But what is your opinion as a person, as an onion?
Let me peel back the layers. I think that we're really getting buried here. My original point was the cause of Bonnie and Clyde's killing spree. It's a bizarre term, isn't it? It makes it sound so fun. That the genesis of this was the sexual abuse that he suffered in prison in Texas. Because people feel like prisoners should be tormented, causing prisoners to turn anti-societal. If he was not a sociopath, he was somebody who maybe had committed a crime to eat, or because he was a stupid kid, the prison experience turned him into what he was.
Now, this is interesting. Now, there's a detail which I am not clear on, which perhaps you may inform.
Excuse me, but let me finish that. I don't mean to say even that prisons are out of the question, but that if the prison experience consists of torture and torment,
right, so
this is what we can expect.
This torture, is it... Who was the torturer? Was it a jailer or another prisoner?
I would posit that for the state to permit such molestation to go on, and that is arguable whether they did or they did not, they certainly had to turn a blind eye and allow the conditions to allow that sort of thing to happen. And I would call the state and the state officials the torturer in this case by means of a mentally deranged another prisoner who was apparently had some problems. So they set one prisoner against another because they feel the prisoners deserve to be tormented.
That's
so it is our own desire for vengeance, which is our own hubris that brings this nemesis.
Well, that's interesting, but it does sort of put the situation upon the prisoners. That is, it is not... I understand where you're coming from, the position of responsibility, but it is a hell that is being created by the prisoners for each other.
I think perhaps the best way we could understand this is to go back to Aurora's onion analogy. Even though all of us are criminals, and I do agree with the caller on that we are all flawed at some point. We've all made mistakes. But perhaps there's a difference between someone who has a blemished layer of the onion versus a blemished core. And it's that we need to distinguish between. So, in a sense, Zora, we all are criminals, but there's a difference between the type of criminals we are. I don't think it devalues the word.
Well, that's an interesting observation, but I think that in order to really pronounce what you mean, you must say what is the distinguishing feature and why is there not a separate word for it.
Whew. Do you have a suggestion for a separate word?
Well, I think that when we say criminal, there are multiple definitions, as the caller has pointed out. Is it somebody who has committed any legal act, or is it somebody who has been caught or prosecuted or something like this? But there are levels which clearly do not apply to every single person. And I think that they are by necessity more useful than any definition which takes into account all people.
So what separates someone in prison versus someone who's free?
Bars.
I think that is exactly
guns.
The right answer.
I was wondering how they kept them in there.
Well, people have experimented with voluntary prison.
How did it work?
I would refer you to the 1950s BBC production, The Goon Show. Harry Secombe, Spike Milligan, and Peter Sellers.
Interesting. I will look into it.
Long after that great summer, when she first came into the fame, and the Avenger from Oklahoma was added to my... Aw, man! These guys published the lame version of the lyrics that that guy from The Who changed. Because he wouldn't see... No. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry I even began this.
You know, I think that
this
these...
is the Pete Townsend version.
These, myths, these stories which we are passing on from previous generations are not always in the details, but actually in the retails, in the pieces which get amplified as they are passed through time. An important aspect of our own conception of our history is not only the facts, but which facts become more important and which facts become less important.
And this is exactly what I was attempting to say earlier, that the great thing about human beings is our ability to tell stories and to convey information in a beautiful and sort of entertaining manner, and that hopefully one day we will learn how to better glean information, how to become a better society, how to really embrace things like this Bonnie and Clyde, telling us that perhaps our society is barbaric in a way that we don't really realize, because our initial assumptions are all the same. And how can we really tell? How do we know? The way that we
what
live our
is
lives.
Knowing? That depends on what the word is.
Unfortunately, it does. I think that it is an unfortunate but necessary fact that we must know what the word is means to begin the conversation.
It occurred to me how obvious the fact that there is only the moment. For many years, this struck me as an esoteric aspect of Buddhism, until I realized the simple fact of English.
There is only this moment.
Indeed. By definition, this is true. The future will be, the past has been. Only now is. So to have any even momentary confusion about this obvious fact, which I think we Western types do, is a little bit frightening.
I'd like to take this opportunity, I think, to invite any other callers to come on board with us. The number is 617-253-8810 if you'd like to join us.
WMBR broadcasts on an assigned center frequency of 88.1 megahertz, but that's only an average. Remember, if you're actually broadcasting at 88.1 megahertz, you're really not broadcasting at all.
Yes, I believe it's frequency modulated, which means that it varies in order to encode the information of the broadcast.
Let's encode some new information now. Caller 18, marhaban.
Over and out.
Maloy, occurring because you mentioned the amplitude modulation, frequency modulation. Amplitude modulation is kind of what we need as a society. Frequency modulation, I think frequency is okay.
So you're calling for this in something of an abstract sense, I take?
I'm sorry?
You mean the frequency of our motions is correct, but the amplitude should be modulated?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, caller, don't you think that it might be nice to learn how to take things slower? I believe that our society moves so quickly these days that really our frequency is too high, and we often don't take the time to think.
Mm-hmm. But frequency doesn't necessarily mean speed. You can have slow things happening frequently.
Okay, caller, let me expand. So you mean that I may slowly walk to the grocery store, but do it like 34 times a day because it's so close by?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that's too many visits to the grocery store.
No doubt that it's too many visits.
I think the frequency needs to be modulated.
Or outside your living room. Mm-hmm. That would definitely be too many visits.
I think that's what Aurora is saying here.
Okay, well, I appreciate, believe me, I think most everything Aurora says is absolutely right on the money.
No, I mean, I think there is a lot of truth also to what you say. But Aurora is closer.
I agree. Aurora, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you by chance, outside of music for human beings, the vocal work that you do on this show, do you do any other audio voiceover work?
Well, I really don't do any audio voiceover work. I do have a small vocal therapy practice where I attempt to help people through my vocalizations and their own to peel away those layers.
Well, there's someone I think who might be impersonating you. If you were to ever call the company California Closets, there's a narrator on their voicemail system that sounds very, very much like you. It's as if I was going to a spa while on hold.
Really? Now, what is the name of this company?
The California Closets.
California Closets.
Why don't we bring a second voice in to join the conversation? The caller has been very patient. Caller 19, marhaban.
Marhaba, how are you?
I'm doing well, caller, thank you.
I was intrigued by the conversation earlier about the penitentiaries.
Yes.
And the suggestion occurred to me that perhaps when incarcerated, people, to avoid temptation of carnal type, people could be awarded for good behavior time with concubine, and we may consider the same for Catholic priests.
Well, the problem, I think, in this instance is that in our current society, the role of the concubine is also not supported, and so I'm not sure who would be to take this this position.
Well, Zoro, if I can jump in, I think it's clear that it would be a robotic concubine.
Robotic?
Yeah.
Would that be an ecumenical, concubinical situation?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the vocabulary, truly, callers.
Well, what about if you had a Jewish concubine? Would that be a rabbinical, concubinical situation?
Well, see, callers, I do not know about the procedures for the spiritual enlightenment of robots, or whether or not they are accepted into the Jewish faith in particular.
Or if Japan is producing kosher things,
it's impossible to establish.
Yep, not for us to say.
I mean, there is a lot of shellfish and sushi. I strongly doubt it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In abundance.
Pork.
Mm-hmm.
Pork,
yes.
Well, in the Jewish food community, what is cheap is another person's lox.
It's beautifully put, caller, and I'm very sorry to everyone, but unfortunately we are out of time.
Thanks again.
Thank you both for being with us, and thanks to the many callers who have called and whom we are unable to get to. Prepositions. Zoro, Masrana.
Thank you, Dr. R. Thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there and to my thoughtful and beautiful guests.
And the slow among you as well, Aurora Masrana.
As always, a delight. Namaste.
Erno, it is so nice.
Yes, it was indeed a pleasure peeling back the layers of the onion tonight.
I was going to say so nice that it's over. No, I'm merely jesting.
Oh, okay. You scared me for an instant, Doctor.
No, it's impossible. I'm a Dr. Janis Sekran here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. Tonight we talked about prisons for a long time. We are here every Friday night at 7 p.m. on 88.1 FM Cambridge. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Maybe? Ma'asalam.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Get the brood, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag, it's a pouch. And it's not sand, it's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.